I will shut down the government.
Okay,
absolutely.
Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 277. I want to thank you so much for being here. We don't have a fully functioning government right now. Fancy that. I talked about it a few weeks ago, and I really thought that this sort of rolling disaster really wouldn't come to where we're at, especially on the heels of Trump sitting down with Chuck and Nancy, and they made him look like an effing fool and got him to say how much he is excited about a government shutdown. I go, you know what? There's no way they're going to shut down the government after dum-dum. I should know by now. Never to say never, especially when it comes to this guy. So just to refresh how we got here, ladies and gentlemen, the fiscal calendar goes from, I talk about this a lot, from October to September. Every October they pass a budget and they drop another one the next September and they pass it, it kicks into place in the next October. Pretty simple stuff, right? They don't run their calendars January to December like most of us do, or like the IRS does when we pay our taxes. They do theirs a little bit differently. They do theirs October to September. If they can't come up with a budget, then what we get are what are referred to as continuing resolutions. That's the official name for them. And what it means is whatever the budget or whatever our last budget was, we're going to keep operating under that budget for another 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, until we can work out a budget. That way the government doesn't have to shut down. So we get a CR and they can't pass a budget. So we get another CR that carries us to where we're at now, and they still can't pass a budget. And then Trump sits down with Chuck and Nancy, and he invited all these cameras in the room. He could have just sat down and talked with them and worked something out and maybe not looked so goddamn dumb. But what he decided to do was he decided to bring the cameras into the room, to let the press into the room so that everybody could see what a fabulous deal maker he is. Look, he's so great at making deals.
You know what? We need border security. That's what we're going to be talking about, border security. If we don't have border security, we'll shut down the government.
One thing I think we can agree on is we shouldn't shut down the government over a dispute. And you said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely. Fair enough.
And I am proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle
good.
Of shutting down.
That is
and
lovely.
I'm going to shut it down for border
security.
But we
security. Believe you shouldn't okay. shut it down.
So what's the first thing that he said after he shut down the government? Do you think that he went to Twitter and said, ladies and gentlemen, as your president, I am proud to shut down the government because it is so important to get border security. I had to shut down the government. Government is now shut down. We need border security. Now, the first thing he did was went to Twitter and said, this is the Democrats' shutdown. The Democrats own it, and it's all their fault. So Congress has finished for the year. That's it. They gaveled. They've all gone home. That's it. The government is going to be shut down at least through 2018, the rest of 2018. That's it. Just before Christmas, there are hundreds of thousands of government workers who will not be getting their checks. Now, a lot of folks that get Social Security and some of these other things, because it's only a partial government shutdown, which doesn't really make it any better. But that's it. It's closed. It's closed until, well, the beginning of 2019. And so what happens then? Then we have a Democratic House coming in. You know, the Democrats solidly won the House of Representatives. But whatever they pass as a budget has to go through the Senate, which is still controlled by Republicans. So there's no telling how long the government's going to shut down for. Right now, It's at least a week and a half, possibly 2 weeks. But beyond that, we could be looking at a shutdown of many weeks, maybe even a few months. I was talking with my producer, Kevin, as soon as the government got shut down, and I said, there are hundreds of thousands of workers who will not be getting their paychecks right before Christmas. How many of those workers do you think voted for Donald Trump? Ladies and gentlemen, your deal maker in chief, the guy who stripped you of your pay just before Christmas, the world's greatest deal maker, you're welcome.
For somebody who sold himself as a deal maker and a negotiator, I don't think any of us has ever seen a public negotiation as horrifically bad as this one. I mean, to say, I'm proud to own the failure of our, I'm proud to own our inability to come to terms here. I own it. Blame me. I'm the person responsible.
And he thinks who it went well ever, the last time?
Who has ever done that before? Even if you think it, you have to do a sort of, you know, kabuki play where it's like, the last thing I want, the last thing I want is a government shutdown.
Every party tries to run from these shutdowns, and they always try to blame it on the other party. There's a fair amount of heavy marketing that the GOP does before they shut down the government every time. And by the way, yes, this is their thing. The government is shut down right now because remember that wall that Trump said that Mexico was going to pay for? Well, now he wants you to pay for it. Oh, you're not going to pay for it? Well, then hundreds of thousands of workers are not going to get their paychecks for then at least the next 2 weeks. You're welcome. The world's greatest deal maker. Okay, so back when George W. Bush was president, and just like when anyone dies, when somebody's no longer president anymore, we have this way of sort of deifying them. And we're doing the same thing with George W. Bush right now. We certainly did it with Ronald Reagan. Of course, there's millions of dollars that was put into a legacy project so that nobody would really remember the things that Ronald Reagan actually did. And although it's not the exact same effort, it's a fairly similar effort that is going into making George W. Bush look like he was the greatest president of this century. For a while there on the interwebs, you were able to Google the word failure. It. Just punch in the word failure, and the one result, the top result that would come up at the top of the page would be a picture of George W. Bush, because people were that unhappy with him at the time. And I'm not sure if it was through algorithms or through Google bombing, but you punch in failure, and then that's what comes up. So we're dealing with a sort of a similar situation right now. The CEO of Google had to go in front of Congress and answer some questions about why they're not a monopoly and all these other things. And the Google CEO, this is true, had to explain to Congress why Googling the word idiot comes up with a top result of Donald Trump. Search for the term idiot, quoting here from HuffPost, search for the term idiot on Google, and several photographs of President Donald Trump will appear high in the image results. The search engine giant's CEO, Sundar Pichai, had the task of explaining to the members of Congress what happens during a hearing in front of the House Judiciary Committee. So, and of course, what conservatives are saying about this is that it is conservative bias. But, if the way that you avoid a government shutdown is to say that you are proud to shut down the government and absorb the ire of all the people who aren't going to have the government that they rely on, don't know what you think that is. So we do have a little bit of good news that came out recently, and I wanted to make sure to bring this to you. This is from Marianne Levine over at Politico. The Senate passed legislation to reverse a Trump administration policy limiting donor disclosure requirements for political nonprofits and a rare rebuke to the White House. The headline here, Senate votes to overturn Trump donor disclosure rule. In a 50-49 vote, the Senate approved a resolution from Senators John Tester from Montana and Ron Wyden from Oregon that would block the recent Treasury Department changed to IRS forms allowing political nonprofits to avoid listing some donors. Senator Susan Collins, you may remember she was the tie-breaking vote for the accused attempted rapist, Kavanaugh, who is now on the Supreme Court. Senator Susan Collins joined every Democrat in support of the measure, which required only a simple majority to pass under the Congressional Review Act. Quoting here, the Trump administration dark money rule makes it easier for foreigners and special interests to corrupt and interfere in our elections, according to Wyden, the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee, in a Senate floor speech. Tester had also been optimistic earlier this week about the resolution's prospects. I think it's going to be close, but I think we're going to get the votes, he said. And then, of course, they ended up with the votes. Prior to the vote, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, said the resolution was an attempt to buy some of our Democratic colleagues to undo a pro-privacy reform. This is fabulous spin, by the way. In a climate that is increasingly hostile to certain kinds of political expression and open debate, the last thing Washington needs to do is chill the exercise of free speech and add to the sense of intimidation. The measure is unlikely to be taken up by a GOP-controlled House and was opposed by conservative groups, including the Koch-backed Americans for Prosperity. So they did overturn the bill, and it's hard to say what'll happen in the next session with the Democrats coming in. The Senate may have been able to kill it altogether, but they can bring it back up in the House, and it may or may not pass the next Senate again. Of course, the Republicans have two more seats in the Senate than they had last year, so we'll keep an eye on that. This is important, though. This is important to get this rule overturned and leave it overturned, because, see, what the president is fighting right now is the fact that we know how much help he is getting from the Russians, not just in donations. That's probably the smallest part of it. But, of course, what he is doing with respect to all of these internet trolls, which, by the way, still very much work for Donald Trump.
At the G20 summit in Argentina, President Trump explained why he canceled a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
But on the basis of what took place with respect to the ships and the sailors, that was the sole reason.
He's talking about the increased tension between Russia and Ukraine. Meantime, Vladimir Putin and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman shared a smiley, enthusiastic greeting at the summit. The two clasped hands in a cross between a handshake and a high five.
That was embarrassing. And if you saw the president of the United States standing behind them, he was looking at them like he was the side piece back there, you know. And is this the two dudes just a high five? And MBS from Saudi Arabia and Vladimir Putin from Russia know that they own this president. Let me briefly cover this. So MBS took an American citizen, a journalist, lured him into a Turkish embassy, stripped him naked, cut his fingers off one by one until he bled out, and then cut his body up into little pieces and took it out the back door in trash bags. This is on tape that they did this. And our president said, it could have been anybody. The Russian troll farms during the 2016 election still are at work, hard at work, for the GOP and for Donald Trump. They're doing just as much now as they were back then. They've just shifted what they do. Back then, it was bashing Hillary and telling people not to vote or to vote for Jill Stein. Now, those same internet troll farms are working to discredit the Mueller investigation. This is important. Why? Vladimir Putin has been using a lot of really cautioned language lately, talking about the world in terms of, we are at threat right now from this, that, and the other, geopolitical, so-and-so, such-and-such, and we just don't know what's going to happen, and everybody's got these nuclear bombs, and it's this language. I talk about this a lot, and I'm going to continue to talk about this a lot. And, of course, it's not being covered a lot by the mainstream media, but if you look at some of the other outlets, Putin is not shy about talking to the media. He, of course, will have people killed or arrested that speak ill of him, but there's a bit of a back channel right now with people in Russia who are able to gather information on Vladimir Putin and hand that off to American journalists, and then those American journalists report it. And the way Putin is talking right now, it's very, very scary stuff. But at the same time, with MBS and, of course, with the leader of Turkey, the leader of Saudi Arabia, the leader of Russia, of course, the leader of Syria, with all these dictators so excited that Donald Trump is in charge and that he works for them and not for us, not for you and I. This should be the lead story on every newscast every night. I was listening to Richard Engel talk about this the other day, and the way that Vladimir Putin does talk when he gets in front of a microphone, you can sum it up in three words. Russia is back.
And the fact that Michael Cohen now came out and said that it was ongoing, there were ongoing lobbying efforts to try and build this tower even during the campaign is quite significant. Also quite significant that he would feel the need to cover that up. In Russia, how are people looking at this whole conspiracy? They're looking at it with a mixture of denial and pride, because the Russian government, the Kremlin, denies that it had any influence, but it continues to deny it with a bit of a wink and a nod, because it is proud that the Russian people feel that Russia has this much influence, that Russia is now back on a world stage, that Vladimir Putin has the amount of power that he can shape world events according to the Kremlin's wishes. So while they are publicly denying it, ridiculing it, saying there is absolutely no truth to it, they also want the people to know we're back. This is the we are as strong as we were during the Soviet Union. Look how the United States is shaking and being manipulated.
Russia is working against the United States right now. Saudi Arabia is working against the United States right now. Just run right down the list. All these countries are working against the United States right now. And all these leaders, all these dictators are being embraced by our own little dictator. But of course, these foreign actors aren't the only ones that are working against the United States and working against Western-style democracy. Of course, the Republican Party is also working against the United States.
But in Wisconsin, it's a different story, right? The election's over. Democrats won. They beat the Republican incumbents in the races for governor and AG. Okay. Well, now, the Republican Party there is looking to limit how much power those Democrats will get, with a proposal on the desk of Governor Scott Walker right now that would prevent the guy who's replacing him, Governor-elect Tony Evers, from pulling the state out of a federal lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act. It would limit early voting, and it would be lawmakers, not the governor, who would control most appointments to an economic development board. Republicans say they're trying to course correct after Walker amassed too much power. But Democrats accuse the GOP of being sore losers, ignoring the will of the voters to do what they want.
So that has gotten a fair amount of coverage in the media. The fact that in all these states where they're kicked out the Republicans and they're bringing in Democrats, the fact that all these people that have all these GOP governors and all the rest, they've enjoyed all this massive amount of power for some time. Now that a Democrat's coming in, they're working to strip them of all that power. That bill was drawn up. A bunch of Walker's appointees were forced through. And Scott Walker was asked, are you going to sign this bill taking Tony Evers' power away before he even gets a chance to sit in the governor's mansion? And he said, the bill is on my desk. I've got some things I'm going to sign, some things I'm going to veto, and I just don't know what I'm going to do with any of it. That was a lie. He signed it, and he signed it enthusiastically. And now the incoming governor has way less power than Scott Walker had. And, of course, it's not just there. That's not the only place where they decided to be sore losers. There's also North Carolina.
A young lady came to the door. She knocked on the door, asked could she get the absentee ballot. I told her, sure. I had broke the seal in front of her to show it wasn't ever open. I broke it in front of her. I filled out two boxes. She said she would fill the rest out, that it wasn't important. I signed it, gave it to her. It was not sealed. She said she would seal it and come back to me and show me that it was sealed. I never got a show back from her.
And so you found out, though, that your absentee ballot was never turned in?
Yes, the investigators came. He came and he showed me that my name was on the list, but my absentee ballot did not come up in the system.
We have two incredibly big months coming up where things are going to be happening that the Republicans do not want to accept. Of course, next month, January, Democrats take power in the House, and they take a pretty solid amount of power, and there will be tons of investigations. The month after that, according to Mueller's office, it looks like we are going to get his final report. And I think that final report is going to lead to this, the resignation of Donald J. Trump as president. Because there is a massive storm coming right now. There is a massive storm coming right now. If the Democrats don't just get him to, you know, release his tax returns and any and all. I mean, there's dozens of investigations that they are planning on. What is it? A T-shirt cannon full of investigations right now that they're going to be launching against him. And then, of course, what we've been learning from all the people that have been convicted in the Mueller investigation is that Donald Trump directed people, including his own personal lawyer, to commit felonies. There is no way that this guy is going to be able to finish out his presidency. And by the way, I don't think if anybody remembers the story about Richard Nixon, but I don't think a lot of people remember the story about his vice president. There were tons of very open investigations happening in front of the American people with respect to Richard Nixon's crimes. And there was a thing going on sort of in the shadows where they were also investigating the crimes of Spiro Agnew. And it was Agnew who ended up stepping down first because of his crimes before, of course, Richard Nixon had to step down. And then that's how we ended up with not Spiro Agnew as our president, because they both had to step down. Something's been happening with Pence, with Vice President Pence. He's been very, very quiet. I mean, even when he sat down with Trump and Chuck and Nancy, he almost just closed his eyes and just dropped his head back and sat there like he was a robot. It was weird. But there's no way that all of these crimes have been committed in the past by Donald Trump, are still being committed right now, and Pence is not involved in them. One of the things that the Democrats tried to do was push for protection of Mueller. And of course, what Mitch McConnell said in the Senate when they asked for unanimous consent to protect the Mueller investigation was, no, it's cool. The president never said he wanted to fire Mueller.
Solution in search of a problem. The president's not going to fire Robert Mueller. We have a lot of things to do to try to finish up this year without taking votes on things that are completely irrelevant to outcomes.
And of course, it appears that Mitch McConnell is complicit in the crimes that the White House is being accused of. And it's not really law and order that they care about. It's just protecting this guy and pushing their judges through so that they can get what they want no matter what. And the fact that the Republicans are unable to accept the fact that they lost, when, by the way, every time the Democrats lose an election, they scream from the top of every roof in every city that the Democrats need to shut up and get over it. And if they want power, then they need to win an election. They just need to get over it because they lost. And now that they've lost, they absolutely refuse to accept it. Another headline, this from Florida. Thousands of mail-in ballots in Florida were never counted. This from the Associated Press. Who knows how badly they really would have lost had all of those votes been counted, both in North Carolina and, of course, in Georgia, Florida. Just run right down the list. They don't really care what the truth is. They just care whether they win. And of course, if they don't win, then that means that they really won.
While the bulk of the Senate session today dealt with challenges to Dean's story, there was one other area which Dean opened up. He turned over to the committee documents he had saved, which show, if they're not elaborate forgeries, that the White House was planning to use the Internal Revenue Service and other federal agencies as weapons against political opponents, who are called enemies on some documents. This is an example of that file, a memo drafted for Haldeman and Ehrlichman by Dean himself. It describes a plan, in Dean's own pungent language, to use the available federal machinery to screw our political enemies.
And by the way, this is a thing that Donald Trump has been accused of, trying to use these different facets of the government to go after his own political enemies. I've mentioned it a few times on the show, but I never really thought that what we were going to be living through, I never thought that I would ever see us go through another Nixon. And I don't think it's going to end with impeachment. I would like to think that it's going to, but fancy this, folks. We've never successfully impeached a president. It's there. But an impeachment is largely a political process. And if you can get enough people behind you, then it's not going to happen. Now, of course, the Republican Party now is a lot different than the Republican Party back during the 60s when some of those guys, even though a fair amount of them were scumbags, some of them had some integrity. And they said to the president, yeah, we're going to vote to impeach you, which is why he stepped down.
Now, here's what you have. I mean, it's very simple. Hillary Clinton breaks laws. Hillary Clinton is then exonerated by people that hate Trump and love her. You know, and that means that they allowed her to continue to stay in a political race that she should have probably not been in if had the rule of law been followed. And she gets caught trying to rig the primary. And then she gets caught. She's paying for phony Russian information for the general election. And that's used as a foundation to get a FISA warrant against an opposition candidate and an incoming president.
One of the things that Richard Nixon did not have the benefit of back then was folks like Hannity and Limbaugh that were willing to go on the air and try to condition everybody every day that there's no way that our guy broke the law. There's no way that he did this. My God, it was really Hillary Clinton, because remember, she's a Democrat, and only Democrats can break laws, and this whole thing with the grand jury. Remember, a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich.
We hate Donald Trump more than we've ever hated anybody short of Richard Nixon. And we just know that the American people want us to get rid of Donald Trump. They think that's what the American people want. And so this is the circumstance we're set up with now. So Robert Mueller is indicting every ham sandwich he can find. He is trying to create anti-Trump sentiment.
So John Dean, the White House counsel that helped break open the whole Watergate thing, that guy's still around, still alive, still active, and he's still on TV reminding us of history. Bring the action.
Be an FBI investigation of an individual or an IRS audit, do you consider that to be legal and proper activities by those security arms?
As I say, I don't know of the IEC itself preparing political material. I do, of course, know, and as I have submitted in documents, other agencies were involved in seeking politically embarrassing information on individuals who were thought to be enemies of the White House. I might also add that in my possession is a rather, very much down the lines of what you're talking about, is a memorandum that was requested by me to prepare a means to attack the enemies of the White House. There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which was rather extensive and continually being updated.
I'm not going to ask who was on it. I'm afraid you might answer. I wonder, are these documents that are in the possession of the committee?
No, but I'd be happy to submit them to the committee. They didn't fit within the request that I had with counsel as to the documents he wished to have produced, but if the committee does wish them, I'll be happy to submit them.
Mr. Chairman, I think the committee would like very much to have a copy of that memorandum.
All right, sir.
So there's John Dean sitting in front of Congress, sort of at the height of the Watergate scandal, and he's just talking, and he just sort of nonchalantly says that there is an enemies list. Congress did not know about this list. They did not know that this was coming. And it was this moment in history where the whole thing just blew wide open. John Dean is relevant once again. He's been relevant in my life pretty much always because he wrote a book a number of years back called Conservatives Without conscience. He's been very critical of the conservative movement, the direction that they've been moving. How when folks like him, a conservative, remain conservative and sort of moved the other direction, how these guys went ahead and moved to the right of Richard Nixon. So John Dean is on the news all the damn time right now because Watergate is once again playing out before our very eyes. This from CNN, former Nixon White House lawyer, Congress will have little choice but to begin impeachment proceedings. Quoting here, former Nixon White House lawyer John Dean said he thinks that Congress will have little choice but to begin impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump following a Friday evening court filing involving Donald Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen. I think that what this totality of today's filing show is that the White House is going to have little choice the way it's going other than to start impeachment proceedings. Dean, a CNN contributor, said Friday on CNN's Aaron Burnett Out Front, Dean, who served time in prison for his involvement in the Watergate scandal, was discussing a sentencing memo from the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office, which was the first time prosecutors have said Cohen acted at the direction of Trump when the former fixer made payments to silence women who claimed to have had affairs with Trump prior to his time running for office. Trump has denied the affairs and has not been accused of any crimes related to the payments. But he has been named as directing Michael Cohen to commit felonies.
What I think about the Mueller investigation is they ought to wrap it up. It's gone on seemingly forever, and I don't know how much more they think they can find out. But if the IG is through, you know, why can't the Mueller investigation finally wrap up?
The Republicans are doing their best to pretend that this is not a thing, that this is not coming to a critical mass, that this is not building to a point where it's going to be completely unsustainable. And of course, Mitch McConnell just wants to make sure to get a few more of his judges through. And then, by the way, even he is going to be done with this guy after he either quits, he resigns, or he is impeached. I still got good money on the fact that he's going to resign. And remember, I talked about Pence a little bit ago. So Pence is beginning to sound. Now, this is history not just sort of rhyming, because the old saying is history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. But this is history not just rhyming, but this is a side-by-side. I think I pulled this off of Morning Joe. This is a side-by-side. Sort of at the height of the Watergate investigation and, of course, the height of what's going on right now with the Mueller investigation, with both Nixon and Pence saying almost exactly the same thing about how, you know what, the American people have just had enough of this and it's about time that we just end this investigation.
It's been about a year since this investigation began.
1 year of Watergate is enough.
Our administration has been fully cooperating.
I have provided to the special prosecutor voluntarily a great deal of material.
Our administration has provided over 1 million documents.
I believe that I have provided all the material that he needs to conclude his investigations.
In the interest of the country, I think it's time to wrap it up.
I believe the time has come.
I would very respectfully encourage
that investigation
to bring their work to completion,
to an end.
So the old thing that Trump was saying was that he did not do these things. Absolutely did not do these things. He totally did not do these things. Why do you think he did these things? But then what we've watched happen over and over and over again is that when we found out that Trump did these things, what he says is, I did not do those things, but if I did those things, then it wasn't really illegal.
Even if he was right, it doesn't matter, because I was allowed to do whatever I wanted during the campaign. I was running my business, a lot of different things during the campaign. So very simply, Michael Cohen is lying and he's trying to get a reduced sentence for things that have nothing to do with me.
Michael Cohen was lying. But Michael Cohen is no longer lying. And that is why the Mueller investigators decided that they didn't think that he should get any prison time because of how well he had been doing. They said, we don't think he's cooperated with us. We don't think he needs any prison time. But then, of course, the judge in that case said, no. Hey, sorry, we're going to make an example out of you because we need people to see that this kind of thing cannot go on, because if this kind of thing continues to go on, if people think that they can get away with this, then of course they are going to try to get away with this. So I'd be curious to know your thoughts. What is going to happen with this? It's I think by the time spring comes around, I think we'll know whether or not this president is going to be able to finish up his first term. And I hesitate to even call it his first term. I'm fairly confident it will be his only. But then again, I'm going to hedge on that one a little bit, because I didn't think he'd become president in the first place. So if Mueller says he's pretty sure that he's going to have a report that's going to come out in February, I would say give him no longer than April, and we're going to have that. So what's going to happen? Will Congress begin impeachment proceedings? Remember, this sort of thing has to start in the House. It starts in the House, and if you're impeached in the House, it moves to the Senate. And then if you're impeached in the Senate, and it takes huge numbers. You don't get to impeach with a simple majority. I believe you got to have two-thirds. So I don't think the action, and that's one of the things that makes it such a hard mountain to climb, is how many people it takes to do an impeachment. Or is he just simply going to resign? Remember, that's not going to be a great move either. Yeah, he won't be president anymore, but he will be once again be a private citizen. And there's a lot of back and forth in the legal community about whether or not we can indict a sitting president. But if he's no longer president, then all bets are off. I did read one incredibly interesting article that I want to bring to you about Newsweek's. Catherine Hignett over at Newsweek. This is her prediction about how the Trump presidency will end. It feels strange to be here. You know, 2 years ago, I go, God, love it. I can't believe this guy's getting in there. Maybe he really won't. Just sort of in denial. And here I'm talking about how this guy may not even survive the next couple of months. Quoting here, in the wake of Robert Mueller's Russia probe, conservative columnist Jennifer Rubin said Sunday that President Donald Trump will pull an unusual last-minute move to protect himself from potential legal action. And by the way, all of this could happen. Quoting here, I would predict that when Donald Trump leaves office, he will resign the presidency 10 minutes before Mike Pence leaves office, allowing Pence to pardon him if there is not a Republican president that will follow him. This is what she told AM Joy. The columnist was commenting on the possibility that the Department of Justice would indict Trump after he leaves office, agreeing with fellow panelist and post-op-ed writer E.J. Dionne. Rubin also said Democrats would have a moral obligation to try to impeach Trump if evidence emerged that he had committed an impeachable offense. But she also said making such a move would be politically unwise. So let's just say that what Rubin points out actually plays out. He pardons Trump and then they leave office. But wait a minute. What if we find out that Pence is involved too? And let's say that both of these guys just get away with being absolved of their crimes before they leave office. Oh my God, Melvin, all of this for nothing. These guys get to get in, they get to burn the house to the ground, they instantly get forgiven, and then they just get to walk free. Well, that is with one exception, the Southern District of New York. See, when you get pardoned for federal crimes. So the things that he did that were found out by federal investigators, yeah, that stuff, he can be absolved of that stuff. But the stuff in the Southern District of New York, you're not going to get pardoned for that stuff. That stuff will still stick. That stuff will still go through. I have no idea what it's like being President Donald Trump right now. But not for all of the tea in China would I trade places with this bag of human waste.
I thought I was lying, James Comey. Now I'm leaking, James Comey. But I kind of shrug and sometimes smile and laugh about it. And then I have a secondary reaction, which is to be horrified at my own numb reaction, right? We have to remind ourselves the president of the United States of America is publicly announcing that people are committing crimes, they should be in jail, private citizens. That's not okay. And if we become numb to it, we risk surrendering the norm.
While he himself it's being demonstrated that he, Donald Trump, is committing crimes and directing people to commit crimes. Now, the Republican base used to think that people that committed crimes should be locked up. But what we've learned now is they think that people that committed crimes that belong to the opposite party, they should be locked up. But if somebody in their party commits a crime, then they didn't really commit a crime. And I would just like to remind those people that winter is coming.
Yeah, you know, as a career prosecutor, Casey, I am confounded with the people who will still see what has already been disclosed, what has already been publicly reported about President Trump's misconduct, and yet they maintain that there's not much more coming. I mean, you know, look, winter is coming, indictments are coming, collusion is coming, it's all coming. We already have campaign finance violations by the president designed to do what? Gain unfair advantage in the election. We already have obstruction before we go back to collusion. We have obstruction in spades with him telling Director Comey to lay off Flynn and then firing Director Comey when he wouldn't lay off Flynn and, you know, firing Jeff Sessions because he wasn't protecting him sufficiently from these investigations and installing Whitaker, for gosh sakes, completely unqualified to be acting attorney general. And as a prosecutor, when I see all of this evidence that has simply been reported out publicly, you know, indictments are coming, and I'm not sure what the political calculation is for the people who continue to turn a blind eye to all that.
Let's jump into the Wayback Machine for just a moment and take a look at what the world looked like in the immediate aftermath of one Donald J. Trump amazingly, miraculously winning the presidency that he should have never been in. It was November. It was early November, but winter, it was already god dang cold for a lot of us. And we saw shades of a dictator, and we saw the ovens and all these Nazi references that we make. We saw all this awful stuff coming because this guy was coddling white supremacists and using white supremacist language and coddling dictators. And the world got incredibly cold for those of us that are progressive, that are thoughtful, that have a heart that beats in our chest, those of us that have empathy for our fellow man. Pastor Martin Niemöller. The name might not sound familiar to you, but of course, a very famous poem that he wrote. You've probably heard it, and if you haven't, I'm not entirely sure how. Quoting here, in the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, you can find this version of a famous poem written by Pastor Martin Niemöller about the cowardice of the intellectuals of his time in normalizing the Nazi Party's rise to Germany in the 1930s. Quoting here, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionists. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. So Walter Unkel, over at the Daily Kos, in the immediate aftermath of Donald Trump becoming president, said there have been variations to this poem. This Pastor Niemöller poem still thrives to this day. It should not. I mean, 80 years later, it still thrives. And the reason it thrives is because we continue to have these madmen dictators. People forget their history, or they simply ignore their history. They simply decide not to believe their history, and they keep putting these madmen dictators into power, and we end up at this exact same place before. So the article that he wrote over at the Daily Kos, quoting here, an updated First They Came For poem written on social media is worth noting. There have been numerous variations on this poem, and Raphael Bob Waxberg wrote on his Twitter account, first they came for the Muslims, and I said, guys, let's take a wait-and-see approach here. Then they came for the Mexican-Americans, and I said, hey, let's not be sore losers just because the other guy won. Then they came for the press, and I said, what makes this country great is our peaceful transition of power. Then they came for the women, and I said, try to have some compassion for the frustrations of the other side. Then they came for the black community, and I said, I know it sucks, but just wait 4 years. Then they came for me, and I said, how could this happen? I did everything that I could. Fast forward to 2 years later, I told you I gave $5 to Donald John Trump when he decided to run for president, and I get daily emails. But the emails that I've been getting from him recently have gotten more and more and more panicked. I just want to read to you briefly the most recent one that I've gotten. It says, Melvin, you've been a loyal supporter of our movement, which is why I'm coming to you with a special request to take an early renewal for your 2019 sustaining membership. Our movement will always remember you as a patriot who chose to remember their membership earlier than everyone else because you believe America greatness is something that's worth fighting for. And then the button, the first button right at the top says to contribute $42. And if you don't want to contribute $42, you can hit the button to contribute for $250. And he goes on to say, without you, I would not be writing to you today. He clearly doesn't know who I am. These are all form letters. And he says, Hillary Clinton would have became president. Right, and we wouldn't have all these investigations. We wouldn't have a felon in the White House right now. That'd be fabulous. He says, Hillary Clinton would have became president. She would have nominated two Supreme Court justices that didn't rape anybody. Hundreds of caravans would have been welcomed across our border. ISIS would still be a threat. ISIS, by the way, singing the praises of this guy right now since he's decided to pull out of Syria. And our economy would have suffered 4 more years of Obama's failed policies. Hold up! Anyone see what the stock market did in the last week? It lost 7%. You may not pay a lot of attention, but if it drops 2% at any time and does not immediately recover the next day, Wall Street goes into a panic. We lost 7% in this last week. Seven. And I think next week, even though it's a short week, we're going to suffer even further losses. The crash that we were able to stave off for so long is finally here. Back to the president's letter to Melvin. But I want to make one thing clear. It wasn't me who prevented this disaster. It was you. What the hell? Now I want you to get blah, 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 blah. That's what I got. As the economy was going into the toilet. As ISIS was celebrating this guy's name. This is the kind of crap that he's just begging. And what does he get to do with this money if he decides not to run for president again? And he's not going to make it. The things that are going to come up in the next 60 days, there is no way that this guy is going to be able to finish out his term. You can hold me to that. If you think otherwise, tfycpo@gmail.com.
Here's the thing about the wall that I think I haven't heard discussed very often. The issue with immigration now is not people swimming across the river and sneaking into the country illegally. These caravans, these people that are coming are asylum seekers who are coming to ports of entry. They're coming to the open, to the gates, and putting a wall across southern Arizona or Texas or New Mexico isn't going to affect that. The other thing, the other fact is that 40% of the illegal aliens in the country today are here because they overstayed their visas. In other words, they got here legally. This is a long way of saying that the wall isn't the answer to the immigration question that we're facing today.
And now we have shut down the government for this stupid effing wall. I want to relate one more story to you before I leave. So I grew up in a deeply religious home, and I learned that God made the sky, and God made the trees, and God made the water, and of course, God loved me. Because he made me. And I remember going to school and learning about how trees grow and about how the earth evolved and how human beings are made. And I went, why are they teaching us this stuff? We already learned at home that Jesus makes everything. Jesus takes care of everything. And Jesus has got this. But as I got older and I got more mature, I started taking what makes sense against what doesn't make sense, and I eventually ended up with science. And I believe in science, and that's where I'm at now. And it's very depressing to believe in science, because for folks who do not believe in science, to be quite frank, they're kind of effing up everything. I had this moment. My daughters come home from school, especially now that they're in high school, because they talk about science an awful lot. And I remember my eldest daughter especially, she seems to be more sensitive to it than anybody, coming home and going, is this really what's happening? People don't believe in science. We just continue to release greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And in 100 years, there's not going to be a planet left to live on. Is this what's happening? This is what's real. Why are we doing this? And I remember having that moment, you know, what the way I thought things were, and then learning the way things are in school, and just having this crisis. The younger generation gets it because they are the ones that are going to inherit this earth. And they are trying to do something about it right now. There's a group of young activists that are trying to sue the federal government and all these oil companies for destroying the planet that they are someday going to have to inherit, that is likely going to be uninhabitable. And we're taught to believe that the older people, they understand it. They've got it. You young folk, you just don't know nothing. But the kids today, you know, are showing up, and you know, they're being born into this home that is deteriorating, and that the walls are crumbling, you know, and the foundation is shifting underneath it, and they're being told that none of that stuff is really happening. And they're taking pretty unprecedented steps, things that we've never seen any generation do before, to try to protect the planet that they would really like to live to old age on. I recently learned about a young woman in Sweden, 15 years old. Her name is Greta Thunberg. Now, I don't have the dialect to say her name correctly. I'm going to play a clip right now. And of course, she will say her name correctly. And I'm going to close out today's show with a few of her wise words. And she gave this speech in her Congress, in front of her country, because this is how important it is to her, even if it isn't important to the rest of us.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I am 15 years old and I'm from Sweden. I speak on behalf of Climate Justice Now. Many people say that Sweden is just a small country and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. But to do that, we have to speak clearly, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. But I don't care about being popular. I care about climate justice and a living planet. Our civilization is being sacrificed for the opportunity of a very small number of people to continue making enormous amounts of money. Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few. The year 2078, I will celebrate my 75th birthday. If I have children, maybe they will spend that day with me. Maybe they will ask me about you. Maybe they will ask why you didn't do anything while there still was time to act. You say you love your children above all else, and yet you are stealing their future in front of their very eyes. Until you start focusing on what needs to be done rather than what is politically possible, there is no hope. We cannot solve a crisis without treating it as a crisis. We need to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and we need to focus on equity. And if solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself. We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. You have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power below. Thank you.
I bring this to you not to be depressing and not to end the show on a sad note and not to make everybody run for the hills and not for you to just say whatever, may as well just get our kicks while the whole thing goes up in flames. Even though the adults have decided not to act correctly, the leader of the United States, the leader of Russia, the leader of Turkey, the leader of Syria, and the leader of any other country that has decided that they simply don't want to believe in science in the name of short-term games. The children are watching what we're doing, and they are no longer looking up to us. They are no longer emulating us. They are no longer idolizing us. They are taking the future into their hands. They are becoming the leaders that we, right now, are failing to be. And you should all, I'm not you the listener, but all of you who decide that you don't want to believe in science, who decide that we simply cannot have clean energy, that we can't do anything about greenhouse gases, when we have done anything and everything that we wanted to put our mind to. John Kennedy said that he wanted to go to the moon, and this was in the 60s, and we were on the moon within 10 years. So to say that we can't do anything right now when these younger generations who are now in the leadership roles, and it is we the adults, we the established adults who are acting like petulant children and deciding not to believe in science and not to take the critical action that needs to be taken, you should all be ashamed of yourselves. I have great hope for the future, but I've got great hope for the future because of people like my daughters and Greta Thunberg. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. I want to thank you so much for supporting us for all these years. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us at the Google Play Store. Of course, download the episodes. Fire You Can't Put Out. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us, TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listener base. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity and those who would deny science in favor of prosperity and people like Greta Thunberg. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.